future lay out there in the bullpen.
The starters are out. Now it's time to head to the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios, located at Tom's Watch Bar. Here's Brian McDonald and Sean Mapes.
Who win it now?
ESPN Radio 97.5, 97.9 HD2. The big voice guy is 66.66% correct. It is me, Brian McDonald, Sean Mapes, and Cam Smith, as you can see on the stream there. It is he's got suns out, guns out here on a Saturday. We're out here at Tom's Watch Bar. 60-plus TVs for all your March Madness viewing action right now. We got St. Louis and Michigan as the only game in action. That game, about a 8-point game, getting to the final minute of the half. Obviously, we can't give live play-by-play, but for those interested...
Oh, steal by St. Louis.
For those interested... Milk Chamberlain right now, only one of six from the field. So everyone's favorite March Madness personality, other than maybe Amira Ora Khan, is only one for six right now from the field. You guys have, Sean, I don't know if Cam, you've been following this as much, but do you have a favorite nickname for Avila?
Oh, I like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Yeah, that's probably the classic. I think I prefer Milk Chamberlain. Milk Chamberlain's pretty good. Some people just call him Kevin McHale. It feels like kind of a tap out. Yeah, I know, right? It's like, come on, we got to put a little more.
Kevin McHardy in Hale. I don't know.
I don't know where you're going with that one.
Hale Hardy in soup.
He does have a little bit of a soupy body, but that's all right. He still gets buckets, right?
Yeah.
He still gets buckets. All right, we're out here at Tom's Watch Bar until 2 o'clock. We're in downtown, walking distance to the Toyota Center. So if you're coming out for the Rockets game tonight, come by early. We're here till 2. You can also watch your March Madness. You can park for free at Green Street, and then it's just a short walk over to the Toyota Center to watch the Rockets play, try to get a second win in a row after their nice win over the Hawks last night. So, again, 60-plus televisions here. They've got the pregame here, the postgame here every night for a Rockets, especially on the weekends. They got live DJs. Giveaways, whole lot of stuff going on, drink specials, and a whole lot more. And great food, including Cam. You have a couple favorites on this menu before we get into the March Madness section.
I know
Chef Cam over here. Yeah, the professional chef over here. You got a pick or two on this menu.
I mean, you have exchanged food for money before.
You have made food that then people paid you for. Facts. I think that does make you a professional chef.
Maybe not
some
chef. Yeah. Chef, isn't that like there's a certain difference between chef?
Yeah, I mean,
without getting too much into it.
I guess, don't get into the weeds.
For me, when I think of a chef, I think of somebody that's head of the restaurant.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So, okay.
That's what I was thinking.
But then also there's the title of a personal chef.
Sous chef, line
the
cook.
Assistant.
Yeah. Yeah. But see, I think line cook
is bottom. Oh, yeah, for sure.
For sure it is.
Okay. So anyway, that's a long way of asking. Yes. What is your? Cam just wait. Oh, I gotta talk.
Look, I'm gonna be honest.
I had the shrimp last time. I think you had something similar. I had the their version of a chicken waffle, which is on a corn cake waffle, like a
cornbread pancake.
Yeah, it was really
good. Which is really different.
It is really different, but I liked it a lot. But what is your best pick here on the menu?
Man, to be honest, I really like the ahi tuna tower. As kind of a starter. But the thing is all the serving sizes here are big.
Yeah, so that shrimp platter we got last time was massive.
The shrimp platter was amazing, but it was 30 pieces of
shrimp. You could probably split it. To take money out of Tom's Watch Bar's pocket, don't split it, but you could probably split it.
No, I came up here with a girl, we split it, and we still couldn't even finish it. It's a family-sized portion. So, no, the fried shrimp's good, the wings are amazing. Like I said, the ahi tuna tower is, really, really good. I haven't had the ribs. I've seen the ribs come out.
Oh, yeah? It looks impressive?
I mean, the prime rib dip looks awesome, too.
Yeah.
But our social media person, Lexi, mentioned she's going to get the fried pickles.
Fried pickles, great choice.
Yeah, good choice there for an appetizer.
But honestly, everything I've had here has been good.
It hits?
Yeah. All right.
All right. So speaking of now there's no good transition here. Teams that hit?
Speaking of hits.
There it is.
Yeah, speaking of hits. All right.
Come on.
Let's start off with
Believe in yourself.
Who's your most impressive team so far through the first round of the men's basketball tournament? Sean, I'll start with you.
It's tough because,
obviously, some of these teams are playing jobbers. So
yeah, and
that kind of colors it a little bit.
I tried to, not the team that, like U of H handled Idaho really well. Not that impressive because right. I have higher standards. I mean, it's so because my answer is down, what, down, hold on, 8 right now. It's St. Louis Billikens for what they did to Georgia.
They were up 40 at one point in that game.
Yes.
They were up 40.
Yeah.
And it's an 8-9 matchup, too, no less.
Exactly. So I was like competition, beat the absolute hell out of them.
Yeah.
Now, that does that is something.
Beat the dog bleep out of them?
Some would say.
Some would say.
Some less refined would
say.
Wow. Oh, okay. Fine.
Shots fired. Shots fired.
But yeah, to play an even you know, an even matchup like that and to outclass them in the way that they did. I think I got to go with the Billikens, even though, I mean, are they on track to even cover? They might not even cover against Michigan right now, but that's the perils of March Madness.
If Bill Chamberlain starts hitting shots, Michigan is in trouble.
Yeah, we got
I'm going to say High Point.
The fact that they're only down to 8 with Milt Chamberlain with, like, 1 of 6 is pretty impressive. So your team is High Point with the upset, the 12-5 upset over Wisconsin?
To be honest, High Point sounds like a high school. So
it does. Kind of like, it does. Yeah.
And Wisconsin was like a really good team this year. So the fact that they put 83 on Wisconsin, I don't know how well they're going to do against Arkansas because Arkansas is obviously a pretty good team, too.
They're Arkansas was very good.
High Point's the lowest seed remaining right now, 12.
Yeah, yeah.
No 13s, no 14s, no 15s.
No, it's kind of tracking like last year. I believe I saw a stat last year that mentioned there was only 3 teams 11 seed or higher or lower, like whatever, that won a game. And this year there was 3 on Thursday, but one of those was Texas. So it's, you know, it's not really a Cinderella story.
I mean, it is to me, but yes.
I mean, I was happy, Sean. Don't get me wrong, but it's not a Cinderella story.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I mean, the last 2 tournaments, you haven't had a 13 seed win a game, a 13 seed or lower win a game. How much of that is like some big conclusion we can draw from the NIL era, or how much of it is just like
that is a talking point right now?
It's been 2 years, and it's, you know, 15 seeds hardly ever win, 16 seeds almost never win. So it's like we're talking about 8 games over 2 years that the underdogs didn't win, huge underdogs didn't win. I'm not quite sure if I'm ready to be like, 13 seeds, the new 15 or whatever. But that is something to monitor, that High Point was the only team, you know, that is Cinderella-ish, I guess. VCU maybe as well, that did win a game yesterday.
Yeah, VCU, I mean, it kind of fits, but they've also kind of like what happened with Butler. Like at a certain point, we just kind of expect it from them.
Like and Wichita State too.
Yeah,
And UNC was without their best player, Caleb Wilson. So there is like another asterisks on that, but yeah, I think that's kind of interesting. It obviously sets up for better Sweet 16, Elite 8 matchups if all these very talented teams move through. But you know, we could have a 12 or 11 win today. I wouldn't be too upset.
But this has been a good first round. Even the lower ranked seeds that didn't make it, some of them played really well. Like Siena only lost to Duke by 5.
Yeah, they're up 10 at half.
It felt like they should have won that
game. CA Baptist.
California.
Only lost by 7 to Kansas.
Like, Kansas at one point in the second half, I think, had built the lead out to 20, but they reeled him back in and made that a competitive game. There's obviously been a few blowouts. Iowa State, you know, absolutely crushed, even with Jefferson leaving that game early with his ankle injury. We'll see what his return to play is.
Yeah.
I think my most impressive, because there's been a few times in this tournament where outside of 16 versus 1, you know, I almost throw that out the window, like you said, Sean, but outside of those, there's been a couple of cases where, like, 2 minutes after tip-off, I'm like, oh, this is a complete mismatch. These two teams do not belong on the same court together. One happened yesterday, St. John's against Northern Iowa. Like, 2 minutes in that game was like, okay, Northern Iowa has zero chance. Like, St. John's pressure, playing the full court press, turned them over. Like, they ran out to, it was like a 9 or 11-0 at the start and just completely obliterated them. And the other one was on Thursday with a game actually in my bracket. You can hope you got your bracket in on the ESPN975.com, but I picked the Troy side of Nebraska Troy.
I was on that
playing the 12-5, and mostly because, and I said this on the show last week, I was mostly trolling Nebraska because I don't trust Nebraska.
Same.
Until you do it, I can't trust you. Well, they did it.
We're exactly aligned on this, and
they obliterated Troy. It was
a coronation. It was a first round win.
Yeah, exactly. It was a different type of domination because where St. John's did it against Northern Iowa was more the press and just being physical with them, whereas Nebraska was hitting a ton of threes, and when they did miss, it felt like they got 70% of the offensive boards when they did miss. It was just complete bully ball from Nebraska.
Troy got demolished, like, in real life when Nebraska came in the horse.
Yeah, yeah, sure did.
Trojan horse.
Yep, the Trojan horse.
Yeah. They stepped out of the horse and started shooting threes.
Yep. Right when you said in real life, I was like, I know where this is going. I'm along for the ride.
If you had under the first segment being completed before we got a Trojan horse reference, you cashed your ticket.
Illinois is another one that just like, oh, wait, this one won't be competitive with Penn.
No.
All right, cool. We can sim to finish
on
this one.
We can offer the friendly quit. Opponent, you get the message your opponent has conceded.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was definitely one. So on the opposite side of that, gentlemen, I'll start with you on this one, on Cam with for this one first. But who to you was the biggest loser, the most like, ugh, moment, oh, team of the first round?
Oof, that's a good one.
Yeah, we had the longest flight home, just getting absolutely now.
Oh, I mean, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Cut the line here.
Okay, yeah, Cam's thinking, so you go jump.
Santa Clara's got to have the toughest ride home.
Yeah, you took that a different way than I meant it, but you're absolutely right.
They should have won that
game. They made two shots that basically like. If you're a Santa Clara fan, they made two shots in the last like 40 seconds where you're like, oh, my God, we just beat Kentucky.
If you're following the win probability, they hit a three with, what, like 3 seconds left?
Yes.
I know. I was watching the game with Joe out at East River 9. Mm-hmm. We were there all day yesterday. Great place to go out and watch March Madness today, maybe get a round of golf in. But, like, we were watching, and they hit that three in 3 seconds. Like, Joe and I, like, oh, my God, they won. And then, I can't pronounce the guy. Owe?
Yeah.
Is that how you say his name? Yeah, he hits that half-court buzzer beater to send it overtime, and Kentucky controlled overtime. Although it was a back-and-forth a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, they won by, like, what, 5 or 7?
Yeah, it felt like Kentucky had control most of the way in overtime. Yeah. But, that was definitely one. Did you think of one now, Cam?
I mean, outside of that one, I'd say probably BYU.
Yeah, that was a tough one. We'll get into more of that one in the next segment when we talk about some of the local teams.
BYU, Wisconsin, probably the two biggest two teams that like most thought like, hey, we got something here that are already home, and both on Thursday as well. So you don't even get that extra day as a fan to be like, hey, at least we play on Friday. We're still in.
Imagine flying out for one day, your team loses, and you have the hotel for like three more days, and you're like,
I mentioned the other side of this earlier was St. Louis, but could we give an argument for Georgia? They're in an 8-9 matchup. They're down 40 at one point to the Billikens, and then they end up losing by 25.
And they were also like an 8 or 9 seed last year, and also got blown out.
Sounds right. Definitely, I think they were definitely an 8-9. I don't remember.
Yeah, I think they also got smoked last year in the tournament as well. So that's something where not to go local Athens, Georgia radio here, but that's something where you got to look at the coach. Like what are we doing? You come out completely outclassed 2 years in a row in a matchup where it's like, okay, we're Georgia basketball. We're fine with being in the 8-9 game. Like, we're not Kentucky. We get it. Can we at least be competitive in these games?
Against St. Louis.
Against teams we're theoretically, like, on the same level as?
Like, I assume Georgia spends more money on their basketball team than St. Louis.
Fair assumption.
Right?
Yeah.
Right?
Very fair.
Yeah. Like, can we at least be, I don't know, within 10?
SEC money versus A-10 money? Come
is that
on,
asking too much? Can we be within 10?
At the second TV timeout, do I think we still can win?
Dude, like, they were, they were down 40. Like, they got treated like they were, Siena, who put up.
Yeah.
Siena put up a game against Duke, and you can't stay within 40 of St. Louis.
I mean,
I think Georgia's the biggest loser.
Idaho.
That's a good point.
Idaho hung with the Cougs for 5 minutes.
Like, half the first half. Like 5 to 10 minutes. And then once Emmanuel Sharp started hitting threes, it was ball game.
Mushroom. Mario Kart.
Yeah, exactly.
Just, okay,
let's carry that conversation over. Let's talk about the Cougs and Aggies. And Longhorns also got a big win, as Sean mentioned, against BYU. We'll talk about the local side of March Madness when we turn in the bullpen. Live from Tom's Watch Bar here until 2 o'clock. Don't go anywhere.
ESPN 97.5.
KFNC 97.9 HD2 Mont Bellevue, Houston.
Presented by Zadok Jewelers. You're listening to The Bullpen
on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios, located at Tom's Watch Bar. Here's Brian McDonald and Sean Mapes.
and Cam Smith, Brian McDonald, Sean Smith. You say that like and twins, like the old Budweiser.
I'm trying to do Jim Cutler voice.
Oh, you're trying to do
and, and Cam Smith.
Why don't you give the whole thing a take? Live from Tom's Watch Bar, here's...
Live from Tom's Watch Bar, here's Brian McDonald, Sean Mapes, and Cam Smith.
There we go. All right.
That sounds more like Pharrell.
A little bit. Now you're
trying to get me to just do Pharrell and fry my voice. Hour two, maybe.
Hour two? Okay. We'll check back in.
It's too painful to talk like that.
It is. It is pretty painful. So like the big voice guy said and got most
and
of it
Sean.
Right. Yeah. Brian McDonald, Sean Mapes, and Cam Smith live at Tom's Watch Bar here in downtown. Walking distance Toyota Center. So if you're coming out for the Rockets game tonight, come out a little bit early. We're here until 2. You can watch your March Madness. They got 60-plus TVs here in Tom's Watch Bar. Lots of great food and drink specials, tasty food, cold drinks. Sean's getting a two-handed alcoholic drink, so he's getting his party going.
40-ounce.
40-ouncers.
Yeah.
So bring out
the duct tape.
40 ounces of freedom.
For the rest of the show, that's what I'm
saying. So you can park free at Green Street. It's just 2 blocks over. That's where we all park today. You can park for free, walk over here, watch your March Madness, then walk over to Toyota Center. It's all really convenient. And you got 60-plus TVs to watch all your March Madness today while you have some great food and drinks. So let's localize a little bit here with the March Madness and some of the results. Cougs and Aggs getting on today. So obviously the Cougs had a – well, actually they both had what turned out to be pretty easy games because A&M absolutely crushed St. Mary's as well. But what are your overall impressions, Sean, from whatever we can take from the Cougs' opening round game against Idaho?
Yeah, I mean, this is a team that looks very focused. I mean, they're ready to play. We talked about how, you know, none of these lower-seeded teams beat one of the, you know, threes, twos, and ones that they played. But there are a lot of them that at least kept it close. And Idaho did for 10 minutes. But
yeah.
Like I said in the first segment, like, there's just a gear that the Cougs got to that, like, Idaho just cannot keep up with that – it's nice to see the Cougs kind of hit that gear. It's especially nice to see a guy like Emmanuel Sharp be ready to go that, you know, this early in the tournament. And I believe four of the 5 starters for the Cougs scored double figures, all pretty efficiently, except for Uzon, who's just good, not great.
Kind of been his story all season, unfortunately.
And then Sinak only had, I think, 7 points,
but
18 rebounds.
Yeah, 12 in the first half. 12 in the first half.
It was one of those, like, okay, everyone's eaten kind of things. Like, there's not a guy on the Cougs where going into this game against A&M, I'm like, maybe it's Uzan. Like, of anyone, it's maybe him, but he also has a little bit of, I kind of trust him because of what he did last season and what he's, you know, he's more of a stable set of hands on this year's team where Flemings and Sharp are more the dynamic scorers.
Yeah, so my couple of takeaways from this game, I mean, as much as you can take away from a 2 versus 15 matchup, and obviously part of this is, I think, shaded by who they played, but one of the issues they have had recently, even in wins, is getting in foul trouble.
Yeah.
And they only had one guy even get to 3 fouls, which was Sharp. Now, part of that is you don't have to try as hard to defend, you know, a 15 seed. So we'll see if that remains the same. But that's something I think to watch because they've had a lot of trouble with staying out of foul trouble, especially JoJo Tugler. And they're not really deep with – really, they're not deep anywhere. But I would say especially in the post because Sokko can come in, but he has no offensive game.
Yeah, that's kind of the difference between – or one of the differences. Obviously, Kingston Fleming is another big one. But between this year's team and last year's team is that last year's team felt like it had a little bit more depth because he had Roberts and basically everyone who's on this team right now.
Yeah.
So the depth there and also
– and L.J. Crier.
And L.J. Crier kind of taking that Fleming role. So, like, really that is the difference. And what Roberts brought just as, like, a low post option where you're not so perimeter – dependent when it comes to scoring.
Yeah. I mean, look, I feel like every year, like U of H, the way they build their squad, they're built for March Madness because they have exceptional guard play. But we've also seen in the past where that guard play is very inconsistent when you get into, like, the later rounds against, like, really, really good teams. So against A&M, like, I think they're going to win, but A&M has way more depth at, like, the big man position that U of H doesn't have. They rebound better. They have more assists. So I think A&M might give them a good run for their money. We just need those. We just need all the guards for U of H to consistently play, because I just feel like it's been Fleming who's been consistent all year. And then Uzan and Sharp, it's like one great game, and then they hit or miss the next game. So yeah. It's just like they all three need to like contribute the same.
I'm also interested, especially Fleming's, because he is the freshman. We heard the freshman moment that he had
in the press conference.
But it is, you know, this guy's first time in these type of games and playing the type of team or playing a team like A&M that plays the way A&M does. Like, I'm interested in basically Buckyball meets Kelvin Sampson. Like, that to me is like a reason alone to turn on this game. Never mind that it's, you know, the team in the city that's made constant runs to the Elite Eight and Final Four the last half decade. And the team where you can hear all their games on our station. So it's like that. It's obviously a matchup we would be interested, you know, we're interested in for a lot of reasons. But I think even if this was, you know, pick a 2 seed, pick another 10 seed, like this specific matchup is interesting as well.
And if I'm not mistaken, I think the last time these two teams faced each other
was
in March Madness.
It was. It was like 100-95. It was a close game.
Yeah, it was another close game.
They've actually faced like four.
It's like Wade Taylor. Like era A&M.
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah,
it was like two or three years ago.
It was two years ago. Yeah, not last year. It was 2 years ago. Yeah, they've actually met quite a bit because they've also played in some of the like tip-off classics at Toyota Center. None of those.
They're like exhibition, right?
Yeah.
Well, no, those they count. Okay, but against Bucky, and we have to remember the Aggies only brought back one person on the roster.
True.
And that guy barely even plays. So, like, even though they played a lot, it wasn't against Bucky and it wasn't against this roster. So there is some, I think, newness for Kelvin Sampson to deal with. It'll be really interesting because we know Bucky Ball, they like to play a kind of a smaller roster at times, press you, get up in your face. Now, I think the Cougs have the guards to handle it with Uzan and with Fleming's, but Fleming's can get a little wild with the ball at times. And he is a freshman.
18-year-old, like, in this spot, you know, like, you can already see the, like, A&M goes on, like, a 6-0 run. They've cut the lead down to 2, and now it's, like, they're pressing. Thank you. They're pressing, and Fleming's is having trouble. It's like, you can kind of see that moment in your head, and that's what I'm interested in the most.
Yeah, because they've overall been very good about not turning the ball over. They're, you know, top 5 or 10 in the nation in fewest amount of turnovers per game. But there's just been some moments where Fleming's gets a little bit wild with the ball. And I'm interested, Cam, I don't know what you think about this, but the dynamic of Fleming's and Uzan specifically, because Uzan was kind of the point guard last year, like running most of the stuff. And he still does that to a degree, but he's kind of had to defer to Fleming's a bit because of just how talented Fleming's is. And I think that's created some of the, lack of aggressiveness from Uzan at times. Like, he still doesn't, it still feels like he at times doesn't know where he fits into the offensive flow and like getting everything going.
It's almost kind of like a, kind of like Reed Shepard. Like, we don't know if we have a 2 guard or like a point guard. Last year it was easier because, like you said, there was no Fleming.
So yeah, he was the point guard.
But now this year he's had to share the load with Fleming's because he's played so well, and it's like he's trying to figure out, all right, am I a point guard? Am I a 2 guard? And if you don't have the ball in your hands, obviously you can't create as many plays, which is why he's been a little more inconsistent this year. But, I mean, there's still a 2 seed.
I still expect them to win. It's just one of those things to watch out for. Foul trouble, and I think, does Fleming's get a little wild with the ball? That could be a situation, though, where Uzan needs to kind of step back into the role he did last year.
Yeah.
Either because Fleming's as a freshman is making some freshman-type moves, or because of foul trouble and run the offense.
And I think they're obviously U of H, all this entire like half decade, like Sean said, that they've been on the run, they've always been like one of the better rebounding and second chance teams.
Yep.
But so is A&M. A&M hits the boards technically harder than U of H. So U of H is going to have to be real efficient on those offensive rebounds. Like, you can't let A&M out rebound you and start running, or then you're really going to be in a pickle.
Cougs by 10.5. How are we feeling?
I would take A&M plus 10.5.
I would take A&M plus 10.5.
I would also take A&M.
Is that the line?
Yeah.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I do like the Cougs to win this game. I don't think it's 10.5, though. Yeah, I think that's too big.
I think it's going to be
plus
to like
310 for A&M.
I think where I would pick the Cougs to cover would be at like 6.5 or 7.
Yeah.
That's kind of my range.
Yeah. Okay.
10.5 feels a little.
Six, yeah, 6.
It's just the, like, well, it's what we talked about. Like, we didn't talk about this part, but Emmanuel Sharpe, you know, throw some dice up in the air and let it land as far as yeah. what sort of shooting game you're going to get for him. Some nights, like he was against Idaho, he goes six of seven, yeah. doesn't miss from downtown, right?
Yeah.
And then, no, that's literally his shooting line. Okay. You gave me a look like, how dare you? That is literally his shooting number, okay? Okay, Cam?
And
I could say it in this instance.
No, I was shaking my head more of, like, to your point, 6 of 7 last night, but there's games where he goes 1 of 10.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
God damn it.
We remember the game against, I think it was at Utah back in February, where he hit like, I think it was 7 or 8 three-pointers. And then the next few games he goes cold. Yeah. It's just, so I think, you know, foul trouble, how does Flemings deal with the pressure, and then what type of shooting night we get from Emmanuel Sharpe are kind of the things to watch for in this game.
And I'm not sure if this is something that makes me feel better about the Cougs or worse, is that where it's like we kind of have questions of how Flemings is going to handle, you know, March, getting pressed, all that stuff.
Yeah, Buckyball specifically.
We have the Emmanuel Sharpe hot-coldness, and then we have Uzan, who's like kind of been peak and valley a little bit. This or not even peaking about, just been kind of uneasy with what you're getting from them. It's like they have all these redundancies, so if any one of them is off, they can kind of pick each other up
for sure.
It's like, but there's not one guy who I'm like, tonight's the night, you know, like where
yeah.
it's like
I think that guy might
like,
be
like
Flemings.
LJ Cryer and Jamal Shedd in past years, where it's like we know what we're getting out of this guy.
Yeah,
and we just That's to me the difference. And Juwan Roberts, honestly.
One of the biggest things is last year because we know the Cougars, for as much as their overall offensive efficiency numbers point to a good offensive team, we know they're prone to these
shots.
They're prone to these dry spells with their offense. But last year, Juwan Roberts, pretty good post player. Like, things are struggling. We could go to him.
Exactly.
You could kind of go to Tugber sometimes, but like he's got a decent little lefty hook if he's in close, but that's really his. Or if he gets a slow big on him, he can with his speed take him off the dribble from the perimeter. But I don't know.
Yeah,
like, the post game is inconsistent.
It's the like dependable nature of LJ Cryer and, you know, Juwan Roberts, who is like a, or in last year's team was like a like drought stopper. You know, it's like, okay, we've had three straight empty possessions, like. We can get a good look by getting Roberts the ball.
So, Cam, if you were to bet, who's the guy that puts the team on his back, though, like Greg Jennings back in the day? Who's it for the Cougs tonight?
I think it's going to be Flemings.
I do, too. Like, the way he could take guys off the dribble and that pull-up game he has from, like, free throw line area. Like, he started 6 for 6 the other night.
Yeah.
Obviously cooled off a little bit after that, but his pull-up game is pretty dynamite.
I think it's going to be him because I think it has to be him.
Like, yeah.
I love the athleticism of, like, U of H big men. Honestly, they kind of remind me of a bunch of, like, Stromile Swifts, long, athletic,
hit
the board. But they can't score efficiently.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of like.
It's a good
accurate. It's accurate, but I don't like it. Yeah, I don't like it, Cam.
That's what I'm saying.
Brought me down, Cam.
Stromile Swifts. No, I'm thinking of Tyrus Thomas on LSU. Never mind.
Oh,
I was
going to
say, Tyrus.
Same guy. Kind of same guy.
Made a Final Four.
He made a Final Four. And then got obliterated by Florida?
Was he on the same team as Big Baby Davis?
Yeah, he was.
Oh, yeah, they beat A&M that year by like 2 points. That was AC Law.
They beat Texas in the Elite Eight.
Yeah,
they beat Texas in the Elite Eight. And I believe Florida, they lost to Florida because UCLA advanced on the other side, beating I forget who it was exactly. But, all right, we still haven't talked about Texas and their advancing over BYU in their game coming up against Gonzaga. Yeah, Gonzaga. I don't know why it's spaced there. I thought it was Gonzaga. All right, we'll talk about that more on the other side, and then also get into the Rockets game as well, as they got a win over the Hawks last night. Live at Tom's Watch Bar until 2 o'clock, walking distance to Toyota Center. Come out and join us. ESPN Radio 97.5.
ESPN 97.5, presented by Zadok Jewelers.
KFNC 97.9 HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston, a Gal Media station.
This is The Bullpen
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios, located at Tom's Watch Bar. Here's Brian McDonald and Sean Mapes.
and Cam Smith live out here at Tom's Watch Bar downtown, walking distance to Toyota Center, where you can park free just two blocks away at Green Street and walk over to Tom's Watch Bar. Great place for your pregame and your postgame if you're going out to the Rockets game tonight. And they've got 60-plus TVs, so come out here. We're here till 2 and watch March Madness with me, Sean, and Cam live again here until 2 o'clock. So, guys, we were talking about Cougs versus Aggs in the previous segment, another Texas team advance, Sean, and that's a team you and I both root for.
TCU.
No, they did win. They did win. TCU did win. Credit. Ohio State's kind of one of those teams I always just bet against in college basketball. I mean, post Greg Odom.
I was going to say, you lost a lot of money in the Thad Mata era.
Yeah, yeah. They, post Greg Odom, I just usually bet against Ohio State. It feels like they're always one and done. But no, Texas gets, I mean, I guess you'd have to classify it as a surprise, even though BYU was out without Richie Saunders, one of their best players.
Yeah.
DeBonta still went off, looking every bit the number one overall pick, which is who I would take in that debate. But Texas comes through. I would say, Sean, even though it got down to, I believe, 4 in the last few minutes, it felt like Texas controlled most of that game, even though DeBonta was going off left and right.
Yeah, really. I mean, they got out early. They kind of maintained the lead in the first half. And then the second half, they started the second half on a little on actually a pretty big run to pull it push it to double digits.
Loketitis was great, other than from the free throw line.
Yeah.
Dude cannot hit a free throw.
They got it to double digits. DeBonta kind of emptied the tank, I think, in the middle of the second half to get BYU a little bit closer. And you saw that really, you know, rear its ugly head at the end of the game because he goes the last 3 minutes of game time without scoring a basket. And that, you know, BYU's not going to win a game doing that. So, I think that the Longhorns look, I mean, I don't know, it's probably like a top 10 game of their season they played. You know, like as far as performance on the court, I don't know if there's 10 better games that they've played in the first 30 that were like that. So, yeah, it's Sean Miller is a, you know, relatively proven tournament coach. I don't think he's made a Final Four yet. Or no, maybe he did with Xavier. I think he might have at Xavier back in like 2003
yeah,
or something.
I don't remember.
But yeah, he's a tournament coach, and you know this matchup with Gonzaga is going to be pretty interesting with the big man matchup. You mentioned Voketitis playing a great game against BYU. On the other side, you got Graham Ike on Gonzaga as well, who really took him home against Kennesaw State on Thursday.
Yeah, Voketitis, I mean, he was 15-11.5. His post-game feels like it's kind of wild at times.
Okay, I compared him to, like, a stretched-out Shingun.
Yeah.
Where it's like,
like, it feels
it,
like
it's all herky-jerky and, like,
he'll make
runs out of control, but it goes in.
Well, that, and sometimes he'll make a great move, and it's like, okay, he's right there at the rim. Oh, he missed it.
Yeah,
like,
there's a little bit of that.
And there's a little bit of that, and then he was just abysmal from the free throw line. I think at one point he was
three
like
of 11.
He was 3 of 11, yes. But
in the second half.
Yeah, he was 3 of 11, but at least 2 of those misses were the front end of 1-on-1. So it was more like 3 of 13. Like it was brutal.
And there's a point where he had shot the only free throws in the second half for Texas, and he was 0 for 6.
Texas in general, they're going to have to hit them free throws because what were they, 49% from the free throw line?
That's almost single-handedly Voketitis because he's the guy that's going to shoot the most because of, you know, the action being around the rim and getting fouled, and he just does not hit it. I mean, they were going hack of Voketitis.
Yeah.
They were in that game at one point. Sean Miller had to take him off the court towards the end of the game.
Yeah, for Texas to win, I think you're going to need a game from Mark. You're going to need Daylon Swain. I think the Voketitis game, you take it. You don't look a gift horse in the mouth there. You kind of know it's not going to happen again.
Yeah.
Or at least you can't bank on it happening again.
I think he could bank on, 13-9.
Yeah.
But he's not going to carry you. Like,
whatever,
if we look
25-12.
Right. No. Yeah. We're not. I don't want to bank on a 25-12 again. I think you're right. Like, Daylon Swain's been kind of up or down recently. And then Tremont Mark, I mean, he's obviously had the big moments with that buzzer beater three. Also had the buzzer beater against the Aggies a while back. But I think if they win this game, it's because Tremont Mark and Jordan Pope and Dylan Swain really start to get hot from distance, and then obviously Getting to the line, because they're the guys that can hit it compared to Vokatinas.
They can make free throws.
They can actually make free throws. So what's the – do you have the line on this game, Sean? If you don't, I can try to pull it up here.
I can pull it up.
But I'm curious which way you would go on that.
Gonzaga minus 6.5.
That feels fair.
Give me the horns.
Give me the horns.
I have the most dangerous feeling you can have in March. Belief.
You're waiting to get your heart ripped out?
All it took was, I guess, two games. Shout out to the first four.
Yeah, but NC State, yeah.
I'm starting to like, okay, this team, you know, it's coming together a little bit. Obviously, they can't defend anybody, so like.
That's the thing.
It's going to be 80 to 85, you know.
Watching that NC State game, like, you get it against DeBonsa, right? It almost felt like at times their defense was, okay, let DeBonsa score and just try to shut down it. Like, Rob Wright didn't go off, like, and obviously they're missing Richie Saunders because it kind of felt like they were just like, okay, DeBonsa could get his 40, but if we hold down everyone else, we're okay. I don't know if that strategy will work against Gonzaga, but, like, in that NC State game, like, I know they were bad defensively all year, but NC State was not a team that was living in the paint in the regular season, and all of a sudden they just had a free pass as Michigan up 9 on St. Louis at the under 12 mark in the second half. But, like, NC State just lived in the paint getting layups and dunks on Texas all game. Yeah. I kind of have that fear that we could see that again against Gonzaga today.
Yeah. By the way, this Michigan dunk was
– it's pretty sick.
Something else.
It's pretty sick.
That's going to be on what's it called? The end of the thing. The end of the tournament. The song that they play.
Oh, yeah. Oh, One Shining Moment.
One Shining Moment. They'll be on One Shining Moment.
Yeah, for sure. But what are your – I mean – So your overconfidence, is that just completely overlooking – or not overconfidence, but your belief, is that just completely overlooking the Texas defense?
Yes.
Okay.
I feel like you said this team can outscore.
Yeah.
Like, it is like I believe them in them in a game where no one can get stops.
Yeah,
that's fair. It's that kind of thing where it's, you know, Mark taking a contested – long two with
which he makes.
5 seconds left on the shot clock.
Which, like, he made.
To me, that is good offense.
Half court at the end of the first half against BYU.
It's like that to me. I guess I believe that you can, like, depend on that a little bit more than you probably actually can. But that is like that is the case to me. Is that especially a guy like Swain, who is like good, not great against BYU, was actually bad against NC State, where it's like, okay, how many of these games are we getting from Swain until he does have the all second team SEC?
I don't know if you know this, Sean, but he led the team in 5 categories.
He did leave the
I think the broadcast mentioned that every time out.
Yes. Yeah. If only there's a wide receiver he was roommates with that we could really drive home to the audience
For sure. I'm guessing you're picking the Gonzaga side of this hater cam.
Yeah, he just let us talk for
10 minutes.
I mean, as much as y'all are talking about the lack of defense for UT and
Gonzaga scoring
88 a game.
Yeah, they're terrible. Yeah. I can't get out of my head that Gonzaga lost by 40 not that long ago.
And, Cam, look this up.
Okay.
I think Gonzaga has made, like, 20 straight Sweet 16s.
I don't know if it's 20 straight, but it's a
ridiculous amount.
It's a lot. It's a lot.
And so I am going against history. But
you know what this kind of feels like, Sean?
Mike Tomlin on Monday nights.
That's true. And then Kansas at home on Big Monday. That happened to
uncheckmate.
Yeah.
So they have made 14 total. But they made 9 consecutive from 2015 to 2024.
Okay. 9 consecutive. Oh, okay. Okay. So it got broke last year?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey.
They bleed like any other man.
But they have reached the NCAA tournament 26 consecutive years.
That might be it.
That's
crazy.
I think I conflated those two. They make it every year, and they make the Sweet 16 every year.
It's not far off to make the Sweet 16 every year.
9 straight years. It's crazy.
I agree with what you said earlier, and we'll get to break in a minute. But this does feel like a team that, you know, new coach took some time to gel, talking about the Texas Longhorns, where there's a lot of raw talent. Well, not raw with Tramon Mark. They just put graduate. They don't even put senior anymore.
I knew that name sounded familiar, and I was like, did he play for U of H? And then Arkansas?
4 years ago,
Like his seventh season in the college basketball, or six?
I think he was on the 2021 Final Four team, was he not?
U of H, 3 years.
Oh, maybe it was.
I think he was.
Yeah, maybe he was. But he is the same age as Anthony Edwards.
Yeah.
Who's in his
it's so funny that
sixth NBA
when they
season.
List the start again when they list the starting lineup on TV, they don't even put senior; they just put graduate.
Doctor Tremont Mark.
But I think they have the overall raw talent to beat a Gonzaga. It's just the defense and the things we talked about. But this kind of feels like, and we've seen this happen before with the first four teams. They get hot.
Yeah,
they stay hot. I could see Texas riding that through a win against Gonzaga. And then they have to take the time off. They have to travel. They cool down. And then the bad Texas comes back in the Sweet 16.
I'm not looking ahead, but who they play if they win?
I can find that. I can find that for you.
Again, Brian, I am not looking
they
ahead.
They play the winner of High Point and Arkansas.
Are you kidding me?
Arkansas could put up 100 on them.
Uh-oh.
Tremont Mark revenge game, though?
Tremont Mark revenge game. All right, we'll go to break on Tremont Mark revenge game. We got to talk about the Rockets. Their win over the Hawks last night. Did it bring any confidence back to us after those back-to-back bludgeonings from the Lakers? We'll get to that and more. ESPN Radio 97.5, the Bullpen live from Tom's Watch Bar downtown. Be right back.
Houston's only FM sports station, ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Bullpen
on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Huntington Bank Studios, located at Tom's Watch Bar. Here's Brian McDonald and Sean Mapes.
Live at Tom's Watch Bar is the big voice guy set here until 2 o'clock. Brian McDonald, Sean Mapes, and where he got it wrong, Cam Smith is here too. Out here at Tom's Watch Bar again until 2 o'clock. Walking distance to Toyota Center. Remember, you can park, if you're coming out here, you can park two blocks away. We all parked there, took advantage of it, because they will validate just two blocks away, and you can park it for free at Green Street and then walk over to Tom's Watch Bar, and that's also walking distance to Toyota Center. So make sure you take advantage of that. Come out in here and watch some March Madness as well. We're on, they've got 60-plus TVs for all your March Madness viewing pleasure. So, Rockets playing again tonight at Toyota Center. Make sure you stop by Tom's Watch Bar first. But let's talk about the Rockets game last night. Got back on the winning track, 117-95 over the Hawks. Kind of a get-right game, it turned out to be. Kind of an outlier game, it felt like. I don't know how much confidence we could take from the win because, what was it, four guys hit three or more threes, which is not something I expected from this team. Hell, Tari Eason hit a three, and I believe I have the numbers here. He is now 2 for 31 in the month of March from three.
I was going to say, that is his first made three since March, 4th?
Fifth? Yeah, Craig Ackerman popped pretty big when Tari hit his three.
I got to, man.
Yeah. It's 2 for 31 in March for Tari Eason. It feels like every time he misses a three, $1 million gets taken off of his next contract as he gets closer and closer to free agency. And I kind of get a feeling at this point of the Rockets not matching, but we'll see. That's a conversation for another day. I can hear that argument if you think they have no chance, which I kind of share that opinion, of winning a title or even getting to the Western Conference Finals. But I get with a veteran team why they wouldn't trade pieces off and completely wave the white flag. I think that's defensible from Rafael Stone.
I kind of think he played himself into being affordable for the Rockets to bring back.
Maybe. Maybe.
I kind of think that happened. But, yeah, I think get right game. It's a real they needed this kind of game. They needed, and it felt like they, it kind of felt like the players were also like, we needed this. This feels good. Kind of like exhale. Kind
four
of
four guys with three or more threes. That
was obviously like
not
the
something we see much this year.
The confidence gets going. The Rockets now 9-2 when Reed Shepard starts this season. And
but I believe this is the first time, though, he started without an injury putting him in the lineup, though, right?
This is the first. Yes.
So that's that. I think that's a noteworthy noteworthy.
Technically, Fred VanVleet. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay. But I think that's noteworthy, right? that Ime is willing to make that adjustment.
All it took was for Tarisson to be one of
27. Oh, yeah, before last night.
Before last night. Yeah.
I think it was one of 28. I think he's one of three last night.
So, that's interesting. Obviously, that's just something you got to, you know, whatever, keep an eye on an hour and a half before tip-off. Just see what Vanessa Richardson tweets out the starting lineup is. But
I know what Bredeau is rooting for. He's kind of been, I think, the head Reed Shepherd stand on Rockets Twitter. But
yeah, I mean, it feels like it's an army of many. There's a lot of generals in that army.
Yeah, no, for sure. He's not the only one. And I mostly think that conversation, not to nitpick or go.
Here we go.
I think it's kind of overrated. Like, if Reed Shepherd gets 32 minutes a night, do we care if it starts from the tip-off or if he comes off the bench 4 minutes into the game?
That's a good point. I would just say they don't play, like, well enough to start games to where it doesn't matter.
And maybe that's why they made the change with how the Lakers games went.
Because I do, in generally, view it as you, like, the same way you do, where it's, like, the closing lineup matters most, as Manu Ginobili. But, like, the...
Locking James Harden in the playoffs?
Yes. About you being nitpicking things. Can we call it nitpicking?
New York nitpicking.
No,
yes.
Can we call it nitpicking when
okay,
you do it?
Sure. Whatever helps you get there.
Or is that anti-Irish set?
It's okay. I'm Scottish, so you can.
Okay.
You'd really be going against you and Cam if you start making fun of the Irish.
Yeah, hey.
You
man.
Guys have more Irish lineage than
so
I do.
So then when we start nitpicking, can we call it nitpicking?
I can't tell you what you can say there.
I just come.
Yeah, Irish.
Thank you,
Irish Cam. What did you think of last night's game with the Rockets?
Oh yeah, Irish Cam. You got any thoughts on the Rockets?
In honor of St. Patrick's Day, which
how do we not leave with Irish Cam that close to St. Patrick's Day?
I'm not gonna lie, St. Patrick's Day got me.
Oh really?
Can
Irish
did he get
Cam?
Irish Cam?
Yeah, can Irish Cam tell us about
Irish Cam drank a lot of car bombs. But technically, we're not supposed to say Irish car bombs.
More car bombs.
Do we have a new name for it?
It's like you can say like car bomb, or it's like a Dublin drop, or like an Irish slammer.
Does the IRA not want you to mention car bombs?
Yeah, because it is like, you know,
yeah,
pretty
you have
tough.
You have more car like bombs than 1919.
A lot of people, you know.
Yeah.
If you go to like
I watch Peaky Blinders. I know.
If you go to a regular bar, you can order an Irish car bomb. But if you go to like an Irish bar, like I was going to, like
I gotcha.
They're a little more PC with the name.
If they know what's up, they'll be
too
like,
soon.
They'll be like, yeah, no.
Yeah, I lost an uncle to a car bomb.
Oh.
No, that's what the bartender would say.
Like, I don't know if you're breaking news to us. Wow.
No. You said it so morbidly. Oh, my God.
I feel like Lexi should put that in the social media.
That's the clip.
That's the clip, yeah. Sean lost an uncle to a car bomb.
My Irish.
We need to pivot back onto the Rockets really quickly. All right.
Tracy McGrady, Irish legend.
Also, yeah, okay, all right. Natural transition back to the Rockets. So, with the win last night, they're 2.5 back of the L.A. Lakers in a three-way tie, but up by percentage points because they played two less games with the Nuggets and with Denver for the 4-5 and 6 seeds and 2.5 up on Phoenix. I kind of feel like, Cam, that the Rockets are definitely – stuck in the 4-5-6 window. I don't see them. I know there's enough time to chase down the 2.5 from the Lakers, and there's enough time for them to lose the 2.5 to the Phoenix. But I kind of think we're looking at the Rockets avoiding the play-in, but having to go on the road for the first round. How do you see the rest of the season playing out for them in the standings?
And to be honest, I don't know.
It is tight.
I mean, yeah, they're literally tied with two other teams for 4-5-6.
To be honest, how inconsistently they've played the last month, I wouldn't even be surprised if they dropped down to, like, 6. Because Minnesota's right there, too.
Well, that's the window I'm talking about, 4-5-6.
I mean, I think 4 or 5. I'm confident saying they'll stay at 4 or 5, but I wouldn't be surprised if it goes to 6.
Yeah, what helps with the 6 seed is that Anthony Edwards is going to miss time, and I believe
it should help you stay above that spot, yeah.
It's kind of... right now kind of coin flippy whether he will be back in time for when the Rockets play the Timberwolves. Obviously that will be a huge game. I think that's next week where that happens. Yeah, it's on Wednesday. The Rockets go to Minnesota. Obviously, you'd prefer Anthony Edwards to take his time with that injury, right. not rush back. Maybe shoot for next weekend, but that'll be a huge one to kind of keep them out. I do kind of think they have enough in them to avoid the 7th seed, like the disaster potential. But with how they've been playing, yeah. You can't really it's far more likely that they're the 7th seed than the 3 seed. Like that, it's more likely that they lose 2.5 to the Suns than they gain 2.5 on the Lakers.
I would concede that. I guess I just look at their upcoming schedule because I think this talk
it helps
of,
a lot.
Yeah, I think this talk of where will they be is not so much their form; it's just the schedule because we know that against tougher competition, we've seen what happens to them recently. Their upcoming schedule, they have the Heat at home tonight. Then they go on a 4-game road trip, but 3 of those 4 against sub-500 teams. Then they come home to finish the month against the Knicks. So we're talking about mostly either home games or road games, but against sub-500 teams.
It's just that I have zero confidence in any game that they play with a team or against a team with a pulse.
Yeah, that's
like
fair.
Where it's like every game is.
Well, that's why the sub-500 thing matters.
Every game is like at worst a coin flip, or at best a coin flip. Where it's like even a game like last night, I mean, when's the last time they did that to a team that's in playoff contention? When's the last time they beat a team by 10 that's in the playoffs?
I mean, we talk about it being, a get-right game. I think all five starters scored 14 or more. 4 players hit 3 or more threes. Like, it was definitely a get-right game. But there's been some games recently. Obviously, the Pelicans game was the most recent of those, where it's like, okay, this should be the get right game, and then they win by like 5.
Pelicans, a team that's not actually tanking. They are just bad the old-fashioned way.
Right.
But because they don't control their own pick, so they're not going to be as aggressive of a, of a tank job. Like, they're not as like, you should really win this game because they don't even want to win this game. Like, as the Bulls, as some of these other teams that they're going to play, the Grizzlies that they play, where it's like, these guys are like, if they win, like, they're mad about it. where if it's not in that situation, like the Rockets, I just don't have that much confidence that, like, when I turn on my TV at 7:00, that they'll win that game.
Yeah, it's just there's a lot of times the Rockets are like should win, should dominate, and it didn't happen until last night. I want to dig into a little bit more with the Rockets, the potential for their playoff matchups, and then I want to talk about Şengün a little bit. We'll carry that over to the next hour, hour number 2. Live from Tom's Watch Bar, where they have 60-plus TVs for all your March Madness viewing pleasure, and they're walking distance to the Toyota Center with free parking at Green Street. So make sure you get over here, watch the games today, and then walk over and catch the Rockets tonight playing the Heat. That and more when ESPN Radio 97.5 returns to Bullpen live from Tom's Watch Bar.
ESPN 97.5.